Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of America this time. And I'm super excited about today's guest. Pastor Chris has been a good friend of Back to Jerusalem for a while, a friend that I have enjoyed conversing with in the few times that I've met with him, just really kind of a connection in spirit. He is the pastor of eLife Church in Lubbock, Texas, and there's been some changes since the last time I saw him. So I was fascinated and asked him to come on to the Back to Jerusalem podcast to share a little bit about what is happening in his church that I think many of you are going to like. I think that the majority of our Back to Jerusalem audience is going to enjoy today's podcast. Pastor Chris, you still there?
I'm here. Glad to be here. Such an honor, Eugene. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm always fascinated with your church. I'm going to maybe embarrass you a little bit and read off of your Wikipedia page, because I think that it will describe to our listeners a little bit about who you are and why the direction that you've taken is a little bit away from the American model that we've seen for so many years. The Wikipedia page says this, that Pastor Chris is the pastor of Experience Life in Lubbock, Texas, and was recently named the youngest mega church pastor in the country. The church was founded in his living room in 2007. Experience Life was named the eighth fastest growing church in the nation in 2009, only 2 years after he started it in his living room. Must have been a big living room. And the second fastest growing church in the nation in 2010. And Experience Life also made the top 100 fastest growing church list in 2012, 2013, and 2014. So there you are, Pastor. I've kind of set the stage with your famous Wikipedia page.
Well, and we probably need to update it some too. But appreciate you sharing that. And I want your audience to know that I am a huge Back to Jerusalem fan. Always have been. You, Eugene, and Brother Yun, and the whole crew have been such an impact personally in my life, and then absolutely in our church. Some of my fondest memories in our church prayer meetings have been the times that you guys have come and Brother Yun has shared with us, and it's just really, yeah, we love knowing you guys over the years, love partnering together in great work all over the world, and look forward to continuing to partner together in the years to come.
Yeah, and you know, I remember you and I met, and we were talking somewhere, I don't remember where it was, and I remember you said to me, anything you need, Eugene, just let me know.
Yes.
And
I
gave you a phone call and I said, hey, do you remember when you made that promise? Because I had, like, you know, our video guys that were able to with me, you know, in different places. And one guy had his wife giving birth. The other guy I needed to travel with me to Iraq right after the invasion of ISIS. And he was like, I'm going to pass on this one. Like, I'm not going to go with you. So I called you up and I was like, Pastor Chris, do you have any video guys that would be willing to join us on the field? And it was great. It was like, Lord, here am I, send my two brothers. And they came with
That's
me.
That's exactly what I was saying. Yes. And we have such great memories of that. And they came back telling incredible stories of the journey and crazy special operations tactics you showed them in, you know, case they got lost. You know, I mean, it was just, it made for great conversation for months after.
And I remember John was like, we're going where? And I remember he said to me, he pulled me into his bedroom, his room at the hotel. and him being the accountant mind. I remember specifically, he said, brother, we have been looking at the risks and the benefits of this trip, and I'm not so sure the risks are worth the benefits.
I remember that. And so I said,
and we were in Turkey. And so I said, you know, if you could just, you know, travel with me to the airport, there's another flight that will be coming out. You can get on that flight and fly right back. And he was like, okay. But the problem was when we arrived, there was only one taxi. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And because he was like, who's going to be picking us up? I was like, nobody. And he was like, who knows we're coming? And I said, nobody. Who are we meeting? I was like, nobody. We're just going to prepare the way. And we're going to go until somebody says stop. That's usually the way we do it. And we arrived in Arbil, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. There was one vehicle. We got into that vehicle, and I was like, "Oh, don't you want to stay, you know, closer to the airport?" And he's like, "No, I'm going to go with you." And so we got into this vehicle, and we traveled the back roads around kind of the ISIS territory into the main area where we were working. And I would like to share this with you just really quick. I don't want to take up too much of your time, please. But this is pretty amazing. In 2 weeks, I will be back in that same area of Iraq. We now have about 9 Chinese that have been living there for several years, working there for several years. They've planted several businesses. So we've moved completely away from the humanitarian effort, mostly. I shouldn't say completely, mostly moved away from the humanitarian effort just because we've moved into the more sustainable business model. And so we have so many Chinese there now that are running amazing businesses. In fact, we have one business that grew 2,000% last year. We're very, very excited about that. We've been able to help several churches start up with individuals that were not Iraqi, Chaldean, Assyrian Christians, but were Muslims that have now come to know Christ. And 2 weeks from now, when I go, we will be going to Mosul, be working out of Mosul, which was the place which was ISIS headquarters at the time. And we will be hosted by the leader of the Peshmerga military. And so there's just been an amazing impact from that first trip that we did. And that was a direct result of the seeds that were sown into that effort by eLife. So I want to thank you guys for that. It's still going. There's a great work that's taking place. It's not the fastest growing megachurch in America, but it is a pretty fast growing megachurch, or not a megachurch, but a rather quickly growing church in northern Iraq that we could not be more excited about. So thank you for that.
Eugene, I love it. Well, thank you. And I'll pass the story on to our team, and just always glad to be a part. Always glad to get your phone calls, and you're like, hey, what do you think about this? You got some guys that want to go here or go there. I'll always glad to help you guys any way we can.
But I wrote to you a couple days ago. We got this amazing woman by the name of Miriam Ibrahim. I don't know if you've ever heard of her story. And I wrote to you, and I said, hey, we're going to be releasing her book the very first week of March, and I would love it if we could bring her to eLife and introduce her testimony to the people there at eLife. And you're like, I don't know if you've heard, but we don't have a main church anymore. Like we meet now as a house church. And I'm like, how does that mesh up with what I just read on Wikipedia? How does, you know, having the fastest growing church in America turn to house churches? Was it because of COVID? Was it because you had an affair or raped someone? I mean, what? usually that.
No, to all three of them.
Okay. I'd love to hear your journey.
Yeah. So let me start sharing some, Eugene, and then again, feel free to stop me. But if I could start at the beginning. So when we first felt the Lord leading us to come back to Lubbock to start a church, we, you know, kind of our vision was to start a church to connect with people in our town. I'm from Lubbock, Texas, to connect with people like high school friends and others in town that were disconnected from church, right, that were not connected to a church. So we came just with that heart for lost people, heart to make disciples among the lost in Lubbock. And so I remember, Eugene, at our first meeting, it was a prayer meeting in my living room, like you're reading about there on Wikipedia, and there was only 12 of us, you know, at the very beginning. And I remember the Lord giving us faith, because I don't know that we would have had faith apart from him giving us faith to pray this prayer. But we prayed in that first meeting with 12 of us in the living room, Eugene, that the Lord in the first 10 years would allow us to see 10,000 people come to faith in Christ. Now, to 12 people sitting in a living room, and, you know, a smaller town, we're not like a major metroplex or anything, that's, you know, kind of a crazy prayer. There's not any churches that are that size in the town. You know, it's not a lot of huge churches in the town like you'd think of in, like, a bigger area like Dallas, Fort Worth or something. But with as much faith as we could muster, we're like, Lord, in the next 10 years, would you allow us to see 10,000 people in this, my hometown, come to know and love and follow Jesus? And so fast forward about 8 years in, Eugene, we had our 10,000th person check on a connection card. They were committing their life to Christ. Now, these weren't just hands, you know, raise your hand and we're counting hands, where you're counting duplicates and everything. We were, you talked about John being a CPA on our staff. We were diligent to not double count. We didn't count you unless we got your name and your address and your phone number so we could follow up with you. You know, so 10,000 people that indicated on a card, name, unique, people that had committed their lives to Christ. And so that was 2 years, Eugene, as you could tell, before we were praying that would happen. In 10 years, we prayed for that. And in 8 years, the Lord did it. It was amazing. So amazing. 2 years later, at our 10-year anniversary, we had 10 campuses at the time. I think you'll remember when y'all were here, we had a number of different, you know, multi-site campuses. And so we never could meet together because we didn't have a place large enough to meet. So at our 10-year anniversary, we rented out the basketball coliseum, where Texas Tech, the University in Lubbock, used to play basketball. It's called the Citibank Coliseum, and it could seat thousands of people. And so our 10-year anniversary, we had thousands of people come, Eugene, and we celebrated 13,337 people in those 10 years that had indicated they committed their life to Christ, and 6,756 people we had the chance to baptize in those 10 years. Amazing. So that was 2018. Now, you're probably like, okay, so Bill, how did you get to where you are today? So during year eight, Eugene, after kind of having our 10,000th person check that on the connection card, we started praying what I tell pastors all the time as I tell the story. We started praying a dangerous prayer. And Eugene, I always joke with pastors. I'm like, don't pray this prayer unless when the Lord answers it, you're willing to do whatever he says. Like, this is a dangerous prayer. So year eight, we passed the 10,000 mark, and we just say, Lord, we prayed for 10,000 in 10 years. You've done it in eight. And we asked him, Lord, speak to us and show us what you want our vision to be for the next 10 years. Eugene, not here's another vision, God bless it, but Lord, what's your vision? What do you want to do? I mean, you've done infinitely more than all we could ask or imagine in the first 8 years. In the next 10, Lord, as we're approaching it, what do you want to do? So we're praying and fasting, Eugene, and couple of influences came into our life at that time that really impacted our leadership team. The first was, I was reading a book. Eugene, you may know of this book. I had read it when I was in seminary. It was a textbook for a missiology class in seminary, and it was by David Garrison called Church Planting Movements. You heard of that book?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah. So I had read it, Eugene, in seminary, but I don't know that I'd read it since then. And I was just reading it again, praying, Lord, what do you, you know, with that prayer on all of our hearts, Lord, what do you want our vision to be for the next 10 years? And Eugene, again, I'd read it before, and this hasn't stuck out to me, but the second read through, I ran across two sentences, and the Lord used these two sentences to practically jump off the page, capture my attention, and change my life. And it says this, as Garrison's describing these various church planting movements, much like what you guys have seen in China all over the world. The quote says this, in the years that followed, Langston, evidently was a missionary, Langston was joined by two other missionaries, Calvin and Margaret Fox. And then listen to this next sentence. Together, they planned what it would take to reach all of the Kui with the gospel. I just stopped and I was like, now, what that's, they did what? These three missionaries, Langston and Calvin and Margaret Fox, it says they got together, Eugene, and they planned what it would take to reach all of the Kui, everybody in this unreached people group, I'm guessing, called the Kui, to reach all of them with the gospel. I didn't plan to just reach a few of them. They planned to reach all of them. So, Eugene, I thought to myself, well, there must not be very many Kui, right? If they're going to reach all of them, maybe there's only 100 Kui. That's why they're planning to reach all of them. Eugene, I look up on Joshua Project, where you can see populations of the various unreached people groups. I looked up the population of the Kui. Eugene, there were 1.6 million Kui.
Wow.
And I was like, these missionaries had the faith to believe they could plan to reach 1.6 million Kui? And my first thought, Eugene, was, they never taught me this in seminary. In seminary, you're taught to start a church or get hired in an existing church and grow it using traditional methods, not aim to disciple a whole people group. You know what I'm saying? You didn't even ever hear of anything like that. Well, so I keep reading in the book. That sentence just, man, struck me. It's like the Lord was saying, I'm wanting to tell you something here. So I keep reading, like a few pages later, Eugene. I won't go into all the different quotes, but I saw it over and over again. One more, though. It says, in the late 1980s, three missionary families gathered a few Maasai believers, evidently some unreached people, gathered a few Maasai believers, and they began to develop a plan to reach all of the Maasai people. Eugene, there it was again. What? So it's not just the Calvin and Margaret Fox and Langston. Now it's these other people in some other part of the world. They're also developing a plan to reach all of the people that God has sent them to reach. And I could keep going, and it just kept coming up, and it was just jumping off the page to me, Eugene, that these missionaries had faith to believe that God could use them to disciple an entire people group. And so as I was processing through this and sharing it with our team, I was rereading Matthew 28, and we were reading it as a team together, and we got to the Great Commission, which all of us are familiar with. And once I read the Great Commission again with eyes, you know, to see, Lord, what are you wanting to, you know, our vision be for the next 10 years, I saw something, or just something stood out to me that maybe it's easy to skip when you're reading the Great Commission. But you know, the Great Commission, if you start in 16, says that 11 disciples left for Galilee. They went to the mountain where Jesus told them to go, and when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some of them doubted. Jesus came and told his disciples, I've been given all authority in heaven and on earth. And then the part we're most familiar with, therefore go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I've given you. Be sure of this, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. But what stuck out to me, Eugene, was, you know, we get the make disciples part. That's what we think of when we think of the Great Commission. And, you know, we're going to go baptize people in the name of the Father, Son, and Spirit, and he's going to be with us. But Jesus told his disciples to make disciples of, and he told them who. The Greek is panta ta ethne, all of the nations. It has a sense of width and depth, not just all of the nations, Eugene, but all of a nation, right? Make disciples of a whole ethne and make disciples of all ethne. And so at that point, I'm going, okay, maybe that's where these missionaries got this idea of reaching whole people groups. They saw Jesus telling his disciples to go reach disciples of to go make disciples of whole ethne. And so I thought to myself, Eugene, well, how many people, maybe the disciples weren't too scared by this, how many people were in all the nations at the time that Jesus told them this? I thought, well, maybe not too many people. So I do a simple Google search, and I find, Eugene, that at that time, approximately, the number of people in all the nations was about 200 million. So even though the disciples wouldn't have had a total understanding of how many there were, they would have known there, I'm sure, there are tens of millions or hundreds of millions. They heard Jesus saying to them, hey, disciples, about to ascend into heaven, I want you to go and make disciples of 200 million people. Baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Teach them to obey all the commands I've given you. Be sure of this. I'll be with you always. He's essentially saying to them, Eugene, I want you to develop a plan to reach whole people groups. I want you to develop a plan to reach whole nations, to reach, you know, panta ta ethne, all the ethne. And then he has to tell them this at the end, don't freak out, I'm going to be with you. Why do we think that he said to him at the end, I'll be with you? Well, the times he said that throughout scripture is because somebody was afraid. They were scared. I'm sure if me and you, Eugene, are there, and we're hearing him say, hey, go make disciples of 200 million, we're like, time out, Jesus. Here's the thing, time out, Jesus. I can go back to Galilee, okay? I can go share with some people. 200 million, are you kidding me? What do you mean, make disciples of 200 million? I mean, we'd be freaking out. But his assurance to them was simple yet profound. He said, I'm going to be with you. But you're going to make disciples of all the ethne and of whole ethne, and I'm going to be with you. And he told them the only way that would be accomplished, the only way whole ethne would be reached, was if they made disciples. You see, Eugene, a lot of us make different things, and churches have to figure out what they're making and ask the question, are we making disciples or are we making something else? So we kind of close by saying this, the kind of the summary. So I'm reading the Church Planting Movement's book. Those quotes are sticking out to me. I'm seeing this in the Great Commission. And then inspired by those two things and through prayer and fasting, Eugene, looking at what God is doing in India, looking at what God is doing through the multiplication of disciples and churches in China, looking at what he's doing in the Middle East, looking at what he's doing in different parts of the world, we started to think, maybe the Lord's trying to say something to the American church. And Eugene, you know this in the back of Heavenly Man. I think there was like a Q&A where Brother Yun answered some questions, even from the West, about why are we not seeing here, what you're seeing there. And I remember, I think I asked him directly that question one time. And through translation, he was just talking about how, you know, we tend to focus on knowledge when we think of discipleship. We're growing as a Christian if we're learning more. But he was talking about, I believe, that in China, they measure spiritual growth based on obedience, whether you're obeying Jesus and following Jesus, not whether you're just learning more about him. So inspired by the stories we were hearing out of China through Brother Yun and y'all's ministry and in India and other places where disciples were multiplying, we started realizing, hey, if we want to be a part of reaching an ethne, if we want to be a part of reaching our people group, we're going to have to make disciples, and we're going to have to make sure they multiply. So we started sensing God saying the answer to the question, Eugene, what do you want our vision to be for the next 10 years? We started sensing the Lord was saying, not just another 10,000, but kind of our part of an ethne. West Texas, the size of West Texas, Eugene, is 1 million people. So we started praying, and I announced at the 10-year anniversary. I said, guys, God did 10,000 in the first 8 years. We prayed for it in 10. Here's the prayer we believe he's led us to pray for the next 10 based on what he's saying to us through prayer and fasting and what he's doing around the world. We want to ask the Lord in the next 10 that we could see 1 million come to know and follow Jesus. You should have been in the Coliseum, Eugene. They're all clapping, you know, but then I think they clap for a minute. They're kind of like, 1 million? How do we fit 1 million in our buildings? How do we do what we've been doing, you know, and reach 1 million people? And I talk about how we got the leadership team together, and at the top of a whiteboard, we asked, do we all sense God's wanting us to pursue the 1 million? We're like, yeah, we believe God wants us to, you know, aim to reach a people group, aim to be a part of reaching our people group. And, you know, 1 million's kind of the first part here out in West Texas. And so I write 1 million on the top of the whiteboard, and I look at our leadership team, and I just say, how do you guys think we're going to do this? And it took us about 30 seconds, Eugene, to realize we couldn't keep doing what we've been doing. Nothing wrong with what we've been doing. Look at what we see is amazing. But if God had given us a vision like he gave his disciples, Jesus did, to make disciples of an ethne, to make disciples that would multiply to reach millions like you guys are seeing in China, we couldn't just build another building, right? We couldn't just hire another pastor. You couldn't even fit all the people in the building if you actually reached your goal, you know? So we realized that we would have to multiply disciples, and we don't know a lot about that in the West. I can say as a big church pastor, I don't think in the West we know a lot about multiplying disciples. And so I told our team, we're going to have to learn from our brothers and sisters in China. We're going to have to learn from our brothers and sisters in Africa. We're going to have to learn from our brothers and sisters in Asia and India, where they're seeing the multiplication of disciples reaching whole communities, reaching whole regions. And we're going to need to learn from them. We're going to need to be mentored by them. And if we really believe God's given us a vision to reach 1 million, we're going to need to be willing to do whatever it's going to take to see that done. So, Eugene, we got training in church planting movements. We call it DMM, disciple-making movements, a process that leads to church planting movements. And I got up in front of our church at the 10-year and said, this is what we believe the Lord wants us to pursue in the next 10. Instead of just gathering more people into buildings, we want to send people out to start new churches so that we might have 50,000 churches, you know, rather than one church, so that we actually, God willing, could see 1 million people come to know and follow Jesus. That's the short version, Eugene. I'll stop there.
This is so stinking exciting. I mean, I've just pumped something into my veins right now. That just this is my language. I mean, I'm absolutely loving it, and I don't know why. I mean, one of the things that I've always believed is that this works on the mission field. But I've never even thought about it working in America. Like when people come to me and they ask, you know, well, do you think we're doing it bad or this wrong? I'm like, no, it's just different. Like God calls us to do different things. I mean, I often go about speaking, you know, in the traditional mortar brick church building and speak with amazing believers on a regular basis in these buildings. And my wife and I have been so, so blessed that during the time that we've brought our, I don't know if you've ever been to Bozeman, Montana before, but it's stinking awesome. It's like heaven for us, because there's like all this hiking in the mountains and biking and skiing. And so when my youngest son came here for university, we felt, well, we'll pick up the cross and take the burden of going and plugging him into university for about a month or two. Because my youngest has never lived in America before. So we came here, you know, just because we wanted to piggyback off of coming and visiting this place. And we have been fortunate enough to be a part of two church bodies. One that meets on Sundays and one that has amazing studies during the week time. And they have been a blessing for us, like an overwhelming blessing. But it's never really entered my thinking process at all to do what you're doing, nor to even propose it to people to do what you're doing. And so to listen to you speak about America as if I'm in Iraq or China or North Korea is really exciting, because I believe what you're talking about. I mean, you guys took a big risk. I mean, I don't know what you did with your building, for instance. I'd be interested to hear about that, because I know that you guys had this big, almost, it was kind of a more modern type of church, right? It was the big kind of, yes, it could have been a church or it could have been an airport hangar. Either one, you know, it's that kind of building. Like, I think I might be wrong on this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember, you know, like metal tin kind of being the on the outside in the structure of it, kind of looked like it wasn't, you know, a fancy brick and mortar Methodist 1800s type of church building in the capital of Minnesota, for instance. But definitely this big structure where you guys brought in a lot of people week after week after week, and to go from that into home group meetings sounds, I mean, that is so motivational, but brave. Holy cow. Did you have a lot of people jumping off boat?
And it wasn't, again, like I told you, that we had found fault in what we were doing. I mean, we love what we were doing. We love what God did. But he gave us a vision, Eugene, that our strategy could no longer achieve. So, you know, we always tell pastors, strategy follows vision. We've got to hear from God and ask him what he wants us to do, and then figure out the methods or the strategies that we use that, you know, that he wants us to use that are best, you know, to accomplish that vision. So I always tell people, again, nothing wrong with the megachurch, but Eugene, megachurches grow by addition. And there's nothing wrong with growing by addition. Obviously, you can reach 10,000 people in 10 years, that's fine. But Eugene, what if the Lord gives you a vision to reach 1 million people? What if you recognize that in your own country, among your own people group, there's 200 million people that need Jesus? Well, buildings and pastors and all that, they're great. I am that. So no criticism here. I'm just saying it's not designed to reach millions of people. It's designed to add one at a time, and here come two and three, and that's fine, and nothing against that. But Eugene, we just became desperate because of what we're seeing overseas and the losses we're seeing in our own country, that we've got to be willing, even in America, like in Iraq, like in China, to do whatever it's going to take to reach all these people. And Eugene, even my staff that was so committed to what we were doing, when we believed God had given us the vision of the million, nobody argued that, oh, well, we could probably start a few more campuses and reach a million. Nobody thought, nobody thought that would be possible. So it wasn't so much, hey, we don't like what we've been doing. We just recognize, hey, what we've been doing is adding. And again, nothing against adding. And I praise God for all the churches that are adding. But Eugene, some of us are going to have to switch to a multiplication mentality that says, hey, unless we multiply disciples and churches, we are not going to reach these 200 million people. Unless the Chinese do the same and the Indians do the same. And so that's why they're multiplying. And I think Jesus was encouraging these guys in the Great Commission to multiply. Eugene, how could they even reach all of the nations without a multiplication strategy? I mean, they had to multiply. And you see it in 2 Timothy 2, and, you know, you see it in the parable of the sower and the seeds. If you're looking for that good soil, and when you find them and the word of the kingdom is planted in them, they bear fruit 30, 60, even 100 times, right, Eugene? Multiplication times what's sown. And so, Eugene, we just told our church, we're willing to give up everything we have, all this that we've achieved, because people thought we were nuts, like you're suggesting. Like, are y'all crazy? And again, we're just crazy about seeing lost people come to know Jesus. And so we were willing to give up everything we had to see disciples and churches and leaders and movements multiply, Eugene, that we might have the opportunity to reach millions, not just hundreds or thousands within our own people group.
You know, one of the things that's exciting about this for me is that I'm listening to you, and of course, you were named like the youngest megachurch pastor. But to be blunt, you're not that young anymore. And so, I mean, you and I are not too much different in age. And when I'm thinking about you, you know, as I look at professionals in general and ministers in general, I often see this zeal and passion in young people, this throwing caution to the wind and just living life in abandonment, just going after God with everything. But something happens as we grow older. As we grow older, we become more planners. We become more stable. We try to provide for others. We have financial responsibilities that are like clockwork, that we know that, you know, there are people that depend on us financially. There are individuals that depend on us financially. And personally, we find comfort in knowing that we're building on something and we're building towards something. And the spiritual elements are great, but I think that there's something about us in our older age that goes more towards security, financial security, job security.
True.
I mean, we start to do things at the age that you and I are, which is, you know, looking at retirement, looking at health insurance,
right,
looking at all of these different insurances that kind of not only prepare us for the day when we may not have anything, but they also prepare us for the day when we pass away with a lot of objects still in our hands that we've amassed over our lifetime. But what you are doing is actually almost like going back to that young zeal without going through that stage or moving towards that stage of like responsible behavior. I see this all the time in like even revivals. Like, you know, I was I went to the Pensacola revival in Florida when it was taking place, and I've been a part of other revivals as well. And oftentimes, as individuals, we go towards that more responsible stage. In revivals, I think that we corporately also gravitate towards, you know, well, let's set up a board and let's do projection of budgets and let's do proper training and start a school and start a Bible school and give out diplomas every year for those that graduate. And you know what? Does that make any sense? Like there's almost like the stability that we move naturally towards. And you've taken something that seems really sustainable and stable and said, yep, now we're going to go a different direction, which is something that I would expect from like an 18-year-old. But
and you see, it's so all that you just described, while it is our tendency to gravitate in that direction, it is also dangerous.
Yes,
because
I agree.
We start to, instead of saying, Lord, what are you saying? We start to say, Lord, here's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And here's what I tell pastors, Eugene, all the time. I don't tell any pastor they should do what we've done unless the Lord tells them. I think every pastor should do whatever the Lord tells them to do. I'm not trying to tell everybody they should do things the exact way we're doing, but I'll tell you what we're responsible to do. Speaking of responsibility, the question is, are we responsible to please men or God? And we're responsible to please God at 18 and at 28 and at 58 and at 108. And so I think our church considered, and here's what I do encourage pastors, Eugene, because what's funny is we wrote a book about this, Eugene, as you know, you guys were a part of endorsing, and we've now trained, close to 3,000 church leaders since the book came out, Eugene, that called us and said, I think the Lord's telling us what he told y'all. Eugene, we thought we were the only crazy ones out there. Brother, we've trained close to 3,000, around 2,500 church leaders from all over the world that are like, we've heard your story, and I think that's what we're supposed to do. We were shocked when anybody told us that. So we started taking people through this same training we went through. But one thing I tell people, Eugene, is I don't tell them exactly what they should do or whatever, because I don't know. The Lord will tell them. But I say, it says in Revelation 2 and 3, as Jesus was talking to those seven churches, John was delivering that message, the one thing he said to all seven, he said different things, you know, to each of the seven, but the one thing he said at the end to all seven was, if you have ears, this is probably to the leaders of the church, if you have ears to hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Eugene, you've got to do that when you're young, and you've got to do that when you're old. And so at our church, we were just trying to have ears to hear Revelation 2 and 3, ears to hear, Lord, this is your church. You're our senior pastor. What do you want to do? Obviously, what we'd love to do is probably just keep doing what we've been doing. But Lord, at the end of these 8 years, we're going, Lord, this is, what do you want to do? And Eugene, if people ask all the time, you know, how we got from there to here, the truth is, It just came as a series of answers to prayer. Us praying, Lord, what do you want our vision to be? Us praying, Lord, what do you want us to do on the weekend? Us praying, Lord, where do you want us to meet? And just praying and saying, Lord, you still speak to your people, and we want to hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. And so over a period of years, Eugene, this was not overnight or anything, but over a period of years, we began to transition away from the addition model to more of a multiplication model. We knew we'd have to decentralize, like the church in China, like the church in India, to not impede multiplication. Eugene, as good as our churches are and as good as our cool building was that we sold, by the way, but as good as all that is, Eugene, it doesn't multiply very easily because buildings cost millions of dollars. So if we're supposed to reach millions of people and buildings that only hold a couple thousand cost millions of dollars, Eugene, we're almost setting ourselves up to fail in our mission, you know? And again, I'm not against buildings. You hear what I'm saying. I'm not against buildings. I'm not against doing what we did in the first 10. I'm just saying if the Lord gives you a bigger vision than you've ever had to reach an ethne, to be part of reaching an ethne or to reach a million people, you've got to think seriously about how is this going to happen? And in many cases, I think you're going to read the book of Acts and go, we're going to have to go back to the book of Acts. The American church doesn't always look a lot like the book of Acts. We're going to have to go back to the book of Acts like China did. We got to go back to the book of Acts like India did. And we're going to have to multiply disciples, leaders, churches, and movements. And that's what we've been after for a number of years now.
Let me just share why this encourages me so much. Because, I really do believe that this conversation together with you was ordained by the Lord. I know that might put too much drama on it, but I'm really feeling it in my spirit, and I'm so thankful that you came on, because you know, since the time that I've been with B2J, the Lord has spoken directly to me that, you know, the way that other mission organizations arrange all their operation is not the way that I want you to do it. And I have to be honest, it hasn't been the most fun or self-absorbing road in the way that, you know, when I go to other mission organizations and I meet with my colleagues, individuals that were doing, you know, similar things on the ground, or even when I go to meet with different the evangelist missions, I guess you could call them, like big names here in the United States or in Europe, where they have evangelism, but they also do mission and they kind of have a department. And I walk into these massive buildings. I mean, there are places where I go and I could tell you right away, you would know who they are. And there are local police officers working the guard booth, where you can't go into that office unless you have an appointment. And when you drive in, there are flags, you know, from every nation represented on the road all the way up. It's grand. It's intimidating. You walk in those doors and you go in, and there's office after office of all these people that are focused on preaching the gospel around the world. And they have, you know, I'm admiring their marketing teams, their designing teams, their editors, their writers. I mean, they have people that do their bookkeeping. Our bookkeeping is always in a mess. They have secretaries that answer the phone, right? Like if I try to call them, instead of getting them, I might get their secretary first. Or if I go to their office, I have to, you know, wait in a waiting room together with their secretary and start small talk that means absolutely nothing, because we're both kind of feeling awkward at the moment waiting to go into the office of the mission director. And there have been times where we've been presented with property to buy the property, and I've just felt condemned, like, no, that is not what you're supposed to do. What these guys are doing is according to what I've called them to do. But what I've called you to do is different. But I can't help but the human side of me, and maybe I'm more human than you are, more of a sinner than you are, which would not be any, I would completely buy that in any bet whatsoever. But I, while standing together with those mission directors and all of those things that they have kind of backing them at that moment, I feel quite inferior in my calling. I feel smaller in my calling. I feel poorer in my calling. I feel like just to get an appointment with this amazing person is an honor for me, maybe not so much for them. And so the reason I bring that up is that you come from that kind of background where you had this fast-growing church covered, I believe, by, you know, secular magazines like Time Magazine or whatever. I wonder, do you ever find yourself in the audience of other mega church pastors where you feel now somehow a little bit less because you've now followed a different road. Does that make sense?
That's a good question. Yeah, it totally makes sense. You know, I would say we're so busy in what we're doing. The work now is, because I told you those pastors and church leaders reached out to us for training. The work now has expanded to 20 states and 14 countries where we're working. So just being totally honest, I just haven't been places like that in years. So I think we're just, you know, staying focused in what the Lord's leading us to do, cheering other people on, cheering the mega churches on, or whoever is out there, you know, trying to reach people for Jesus, cheering everybody on, and just really, Eugene, kind of trying to stay focused on what the Lord's called us to do.
That's exactly the way that we feel. I've sat down with our team. I love the way that we do life together and ministry together. The guys that I'm working with, the women that I'm working with today, I mean, I have to tell you, I feel like I'm going to be with them for the rest of my life. We have a very low turnover when it comes to our staff, because anybody that comes and works with us knows that they're entering into a life of poverty. So, I mean, they're promised that from the very beginning. So there's something else that brings them in, and they often, and the people that I serve with, I love, and I love their families, and I love being together with them. And we often get like this cabin in Tennessee mountains, and we just kind of live together at least one time throughout the year. And during that time, I just feel like, no, this, I would rather do this. This is what God has called us to do. You know, I have those glimpses where I'm in those moments for only a short amount of time, but there's been time where property has popped up or a system has popped up, and we've been enticed with it for a moment. But then we remember the flavor of what it feels like doing what we're doing it together. And it feels small in some ways, but you start, if you step back and you take a 30,000 foot view of the ground and the people that we're working with and the people that we're serving and those that we get the privilege to live life with, even people like you, Pastor Chris, I feel like, no, this is, it feels so much better to walk in the ways of God and not chase after what the world would consider to be a better road.
And Eugene, I would just say, and again, me and you are both, you know, cheering the people on we're talking about, but I would say some of those things that we can tend to sometimes be tempted to admire are actually keeping those churches or ministries from multiplication.
So I completely
agree.
They're
good. And, I, yep. And Eugene, I can say that because I've had them. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I love, and pastors know I love them, so I'm pro pastor, pro churches. But what I'm saying is sometimes these things that, you know, somebody from an organization like yours can go in and see and go, wow, what you don't realize when you're saying wow, or when you maybe even be tempted at times to say, man, it'd be cool to have that, is sometimes those things can hurt you more than they help you because they're hard to reproduce. And Eugene, if our mission, if your mission in China and around the world, our mission is to do what Jesus said in Matthew 28, make as many disciples of whole ethne and of all the ethne as we can. We have got to eliminate as many things as we can that are difficult to reproduce. Why, Eugene? So that ordinary men and women like John and Peter in Acts 4 can go out and share this great message and multiply themselves without all of the things that can tend to hinder you that are often a part of larger ministries. You know, you got to get permission from this person, you got to get this training, and you know, oh, I haven't gotten as much, you know, there's just a number of things that can hinder what ultimately we're wanting to see. So I think everybody in every model, your organization, even ours now, big churches, small churches, everybody has to evaluate, is there anything that I'm doing that is hindering my mission? You know, one thing that Paul said to the Corinthian church, I was reading the other day, so convicted in 1 Corinthians 11. He said, you guys, your meetings do more harm than good. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. is it
possible sometimes, Eugene, in my own church and other churches, that sometimes our meetings or the way we set things up can do more harm than good to our mission? You know, we have to be asking, what is our mission? Lord, what have you called us to do? And is there anything that needs to be added to what I'm doing, removed from what I'm doing, change in what I'm doing, so that I can be completely focused, with undivided focus, on accomplishing this great mission you've given us? So that's what I would encourage you with, Eugene. I love you guys staying nimble. I love you guys staying, even with your team, if it could grow larger, staying small, and just nothing that would hinder you guys from accomplishing your mission. And sometimes, again, those things that we can yearn for or think look so cool actually could really hurt what our organization is trying to, it'll really impede what our organization is trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I want to get into where you're at now and what you guys are doing now and what you've experienced since you've taken this turn. But before we do, I just want to, you know, give testimony to how this is resonating with me, because during the time of 2020, I remember listening to a podcast with Elon Musk. And Elon Musk, of course, you know, being this great entrepreneur as it is with space exploration and the Boring Company and Tesla, he said something and even in his secularism really spoke to me in my spirit. And that was, he decided to sell all the property that he owned. And he was being asked why. And he said, well, the reason why is I feel like, you know, I could spend time in this house that I've built, that I own, working outside in the yard, or I could be working on a space project that will change the humankind forever. I could be painting my fence, or I could, you know, be working on this explosive energy hosting device that can replace batteries in the future. And I was listening to that, and I was like, you know, there's nothing wrong with painting a fence. There's nothing wrong with taking care of your yard, but that's where God has called me to be. Like, I don't want to spend any time whatsoever that I don't need to, even though it might seem like a normal repetitive thing. So last year, my wife and I, or sorry, the beginning of this year. Wow, it's already been the beginning of this year. Feels like longer. But my wife and I got an email from our property owner. We were renting property in China, and they said, we've sold it, and the owner wants to move in, so you guys have to move out. So we started to think, because we were in Sweden at the time, how do we scramble and get another place and move all of our furniture and everything that we own into this new house? But we really felt the Spirit of the Lord say, get rid of it. Why do you need it? I'll take care of you. And that you can spend all of your time, like, so right now we're homeless and loving it. Like, we are able to go where God calls us to go and not put any, I have to tell you also that getting apartments in hotels is extremely addictive. Like, I'm like, why haven't I done this longer? So I've lived out of my suitcase now for a year and a half. So for a year and a half, I've been living out of my suitcase. We sold everything that we owned here in the US and everything that we owned everywhere else, so in Asia. And so we really own nothing. And now that our boys are in university, we're, you know, we have this empty nest syndrome now, and we're loving it. So I wanted to say that in relation to what you're saying is that I really feel that same calling burden, like, what am I spending my time on that can be used for the gospel? And I want to be cautious. I, you know, in one way, you know, we can say that it's obsessive, but in another way, I have to tell you that I have so much more time, even when I'm not doing the things that I feel that God has called me to do. Like, I feel like I'm rested, and like there's a part of me that's almost like, you know, hyperventilating to do what God has called me to do, like a horse that's been, you know, that is ready for the races. If you've ever been around a racehorse, just biting at the bit, like, come on, I'm ready. So when you are saying, you know, remove from me what is not what is not productive for the ministry, or add to me the things that you would have me to focus on. I've been going through that same thing. Maybe you've been going through it longer, but in this last year, and God even threw in some secular voices for me that really ministered to that in that moment. But I would love to hear. I've taken up a lot of your time. I apologize. This is a lot of fun. I'm loving this so much. But I want to ask, like, so since then, what's happened? You adopted this model as a leadership team, basically in most rational thinking Christians, this seems suicidal. What happened once you pulled that trigger?
Yeah, so let me say this first, just in case somebody wants the longer version of this explanation. We wrote a book about it, and it's called From Megachurch to Multiplication, again, describing that transition from the megachurch or addition kind of model to multiplication. And the reason, Eugene, you might remember when I reached out to you about it, the reason we wrote the book initially was just to give out to other pastors in our town so they wouldn't think we were totally nuts. We knew they would think we were nuts, but just kind of explain how we got here and how the Lord, through answers to prayer and so on, led us to this place. So if your audience is just interested in reading the whole story because they're fascinated by it, definitely check out the book. And then our website is experiencelifenow.com, and there's a blog there, Eugene, where we even, once the book was published, we've kept, blogging to update people on the journey. So they can, as much as they want to know, they can find in those two places. So essentially, Eugene, what happened is after that 10-year anniversary, and we just kind of went public with this new vision. And one thing that was cool, Eugene, I wish you guys could have been there, but at the 10-year anniversary, is I'm talking about multiplying disciples to reach 1 million. And I'm talking about how we haven't really seen this in America, but we've seen it around the world. I've got Victor John in the audience on the second row, who you may know, who's a part of a movement that's broken out in multiple movements in India. And he was a mission partner of ours, like you guys were for years. And I'm like, I'm feeling like he's the only one in the whole Coliseum that understands what I'm talking about. And I was just saying, he's right here. Here's Victor John. He's on the second row. And essentially what we're saying, we want to see in America what he's seeing in India. That's what we're saying here in the next 10 years. The million in 10 years, we're saying, Lord, do in America what we're hearing about in India and in China. Eugene, we're, as you know, I mean, you know this better than I, that in, these places around the world where the Lord is at work, we're not talking about just hundreds coming to know Jesus, right? Or even thousands. We're talking about millions, even tens of millions. And it's amazing. And it's not in, tens of millions over 50 years. I mean, it's quick. It's multiplication, not addition. What's happening in China, as you know, and is described in Brother Young's book, is not addition. It is absolutely multiplication. So anyway, that's us at the 10-year anniversary. And so the following weekend, our next series, we kept meeting on Sundays. We didn't stop the Sunday gathering. We actually didn't stop the corporate big Sunday gathering for about 2.5 years. It was a transition. And we weren't even sure that we were going to stop it. We were just going to keep it going. But we were encouraging people to start churches outside of our church, and not just in homes, but in homes or businesses or, wherever. But start churches like the churches that we see in the book of Acts, like the churches that we've witnessed in China and India and these other places. We were sending people out. At our 10-year anniversary, Eugene, we sent out our first 50. So we had like 50 teams or churches that had come up to the front that we'd already trained, taken through this DMM training that we received from overseas, and we trained them in it, and they wanted to go out and start these, we called them DMM churches, start DMM churches in their homes or in their businesses or wherever. So we lay hands on them, and we commission them out. Some of them have merged together since then, and they've multiplied into different states. But even right there in that gathering, Eugene, we were already saying, this is what it looks like in the next 10, not just, addition is, Eugene, essentially, hey, come to me and attend my worship services. Multiplication is, I'm sending you out from the worship services to change the world. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. And so we were kind of saying, hey, in the next 10, it's not going to be about, hey, get all your friends together and bring them to church to hear us preach to them, kind of like in the first 10. And Eugene, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying you're going to keep growing by addition, right? So we're saying, instead of bringing your friends to church, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go out and you're going to start discovery groups with your friends and their friends and family, see them come to know the Lord and plant a church in that home, and then send them out to do the same thing. They may not even ever know our names, but we're going to train you how to do it. You know what I'm saying, Eugene? Because we wanted to see multiplication. So it was more of a thrusting out in the next 10. We knew that was what we'd have to do to reach 1 million, rather than a gathering them all in and building new buildings as we outgrew our existing ones. So, over the coming years, we were still having weekends, but our weekends changed, Eugene. Instead of it being kind of more the attractional megachurch type gathering of the first 10, we saw them as more opportunities to equip people to leave the church and start churches. I know it sounds ridiculous in America, but this is really what we were doing. And we're, having series talking about it, and then we were offering these DMM trainings that people could join. And Eugene, like the book describes, there's a lot of people that left. As you might imagine, they're like, hey, I liked the first 10 years. This whole multiplying disciples, I mean, I get it, and I'm, clapping and cheering for you, but I just want to go to a normal church. So we had thousands of people leave, and not really on bad terms, but just saying, hey, this is not you know, I'm just looking for a good church to go to on Sunday morning. I'm cheering for you guys and what you're doing, but I'm, you know, I want a good church to go to with my family. Where, you know, whereas we were kind of becoming almost like a missionary sending organization, trying to send everybody out to make disciples among, you know, in their neighborhoods and across the region. So, and we had accounted for this even with our budget. We knew, well, hey, there's going to be, when we announced it, Eugene, at the 10-year anniversary, we knew some people would not want to join us for the next 10. They might cheer for us, but just say, hey, I've enjoyed coming the first 10. I'm not thinking I will the second 10. And so we knew that, you know, we would not have the same giving coming in. We had accounted for all that. And we knew, Eugene, even with an attendance decline and even with a giving decline, that this is what the Lord had led us to do. And so we were glad for the Lord to do whatever he wanted to do in order to get us where he wanted to be. And so we're in this transition over a number of years. We're sending people out. Other people we're blessing as they go to new churches. And we're beginning to see, Eugene, what surprised us the most is we were beginning to see interest from other people saying, I've heard about what's going on there. And the spirit inside of me testifies with your spirit that this is what we should be doing too. And again, Eugene, I wasn't an evangelist for this or anything. We were just saying this is what the Lord's told us to do. And so we started training leaders, not just from Lubbock, not just from West Texas, but all across Texas, the nation. I couldn't have anticipated this. I thought it would be a West Texas thing. We started training people from all over the nation, pastors and church leaders that had heard about what was going on and wanted to go through the same training that we received from overseas. And then we started having people contact us from around the world, from all kinds of different places that, you know, have very few Christians, and we had the opportunity to train them or send them to other people to be trained. So Eugene, we're training people, and they're then in turn trying to figure out in their context what the Lord wants them to do now that they've learned these New Testament multiplication principles. So so again, like I told you, we trained over 2,000, about 2,500 leaders from all over the world. Right now, our network, Eugene, and there's other churches I'm sure that have been planted that are not a part of our network, but our network of churches we're tracking, there's about 94 churches right now in 20 states and in 14 countries that meet in either homes or businesses or wherever. And we've started about 530 discovery groups. These are groups of lost people that believers, who we call church planners, have gotten together around God's word, discovering more about his plan for their life, and hopefully on their way to becoming a church when they pledge their allegiance to Jesus and are baptized. So we're hoping that number continues to grow. But Eugene, I mean, we could have never dreamed that this would even be outside of Lubbock. But what surprised us maybe the most was, as people read the blog or got the book, they said, I think this is what the Spirit is saying to the church. I think this is what the Spirit is saying to our church. We want to join you. And we're like, are you sure? Because here's that. I mean, because it's costly. You know, you don't keep everything you have and join us. I mean, we sold our main building. And so we didn't have to, Eugene. We could have easily kept it, but we sold it. And we knew we'd be able to use that money to get the good news to the unreached, and instead of just sitting in a big building, because we're multiplying churches outside the building. But that kind of brings you up to where we're at now. And so we're coaching and training these churches in our network. And we haven't seen millions yet. We haven't seen the million, but we're praying toward it. And we believe that we believe that the principles that could lead us to a million, that have led the Chinese or the Indians or the Africans to a million, we believe those principles are in place. We call it raising the sails. We believe we've got the sails raised, and we're just praying the wind of the Spirit would blow into those sails and give us the movement to millions that we're hoping for.
Well, I mean, with 20 states in the U.S., that's over 40% of America, 14 different countries, that's all, and 2,400 leaders, or more than 2,400 leaders trained. I mean, who knows how many people they are impacting? So, I mean, this is already pretty exciting. And what you guys have done really did take a step of faith. And so I find it super exciting. Just practically, out of curiosity, where do you guys host the training? Do you do that in rooms? And do you have a space dedicated for that?
Eugene, it's almost exclusively on Zoom now.
Okay.
And the reason why, because the interest in training comes from all over the world.
So we
wouldn't even know how to meet together. So basically, they go to the website, they can sign up for a training, and there's usually a waiting list. And we have one about every, about every other month, and there's usually about 100 people or so on the waiting list, 50 to 100 people, usually pastors and church leaders, and they'll go through the training. And Eugene, the truth is, some of them go through the training, and they're like, this is amazing, but the cost is too high, you know, or I just can't, I just don't know that this is something I can do in my context, they might say. And others go through the training, and Eugene, it's like what they've been waiting for their whole lives, and they're also willing to give up everything they have to follow Jesus. And again, we don't pretend to know what the Lord wants each person to do, so we don't tell them exactly. We just say, hey, here's what we learned. And what's awesome, Eugene, about this training, I'm sure y'all use something similar in China. I didn't put together the training. We received the training from Dr. Stan Parks, who you may know, who's worked with Victor, and he's worked with other movements all over the world, and his training has come together kind of out of all these movements in China and India, all these places, kind of the principles they've learned, and he passed them on to us, and we're passing them on to American pastors. So I always tell people, this isn't an ELAC training. We received this from overseas where they're seeing the stuff happen that all of us are praying to see happen in our own country.
Oh, I really love this. Thank you so much, Pastor, for coming on. If you guys are listening to this and you want to know more, I encourage you, go on to their website. It's experiencelifenow.com. There you will get a lot of the information of what Pastor Chris is talking about. Also, their book. I highly recommend their book, From Megachurch to Multiplication. You can find that, I think you can find that on their website, but you can definitely find it on Amazon. And I think the audiobook is free. Is there an audiobook?
There is an audiobook that you can get on Audible, on Amazon, or our website. You can buy, a lot of people buy boxes in bulk. And so you can buy in bulk on our website, or you can just buy on Amazon.
Okay, yeah, I see that. I see the audiobook available on Amazon for free. So I was like, okay, is it for free because it doesn't exist, or is it for free because it's for free? It says $0, at least what I'm looking at.
If you join Audible, I don't think it's actually free. I think it's free. I don't know how Amazon prices it, but I think it's free if you join an Audible trial or something. Otherwise, I think it's like $16 or something.
No, you're absolutely right. If I look over to the right hand of my screen while I'm talking to you, it says free with Audible trial. So, yep, that is, that is it. That is, okay. So again,
Kindle version, paperback, or audio version.
Okay, yes, that those are available. That's on your website as well, is that correct?
ExperienceLifeNow.com? The only thing on our website is buying paperback books. Amazon has the Kindle, you know, that you can read on your phone, and the Audible.
Okay, yep, and I see that. So if you go to the website, you can get the book there, or you can go to Amazon and get the Kindle version or the audiobook version. And this is, I mean, if you think that this podcast is exciting, I think this only scratches the surface. Again, From Megachurch to Multiplication, and experiencelifenow.com with the great and amazing Pastor Chris. Thank you so much, brother. It has been a real pleasure.
Hey, I've loved it, Eugene. I always love being with you, and I hope this is helpful to your audience. And cheering back to Jerusalem on. We're big fans, and anything we can do to help, but we look forward to continuing to partner together in the future.
Thanks, brother. God bless you. Take it easy.
God bless. See you. All right.
Such an amazing pastor, such a great friend. Miss being with him in Lubbock, trying to find an excuse to get back there just to say hello, but to make it sound like I'm there for another reason that is more important and justifies ministry expenses for flying to Lubbock. But Pastor Chris, just at the last minute, we were communicating by email this morning, and I asked him if he could come on. And I was thinking that, like a lot of people, they often want to make reservations or, you know, time, because everybody has a busy life. So they're like, I can do this, you know, next week on Monday at 2:00 in the afternoon, you know, something like that. Pastor Chris is like, yep, I'm in a meeting right now. As soon as I get out, let me know. I will join the podcast. So just an amazing, amazing brother. Again, I really highly recommend getting that book. It's something that I think will be a blessing. If you think that what he just said was a powerful testimony for you, and it could be something for you and your church, then I highly recommend it. I want to thank you so much for downloading this Back to Jerusalem podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of America. God bless.